My thanks to Robert Knight for joining us for the first hour. We continue our UFO roundtable coming up with Antonio Joneas and Alejandro Rojas of the Open Minds Productions Organization. They've got a lot of ground to cover. We're going to jump right into it right after this break on Coast to Coast AM. I have interviewed these two guys, known both of them for quite a while, Alejandro Rojas and Antonio Joneas, both now working at Open Minds Radio and Open Minds Productions, and both have been studying UFOs for a long, long time. Guys, I want to start with a question that I haven't asked you before in all the times I've interviewed you, and that's how life brought you to this place. Antonio, I think you've been doing this longer than I have, and how is it that you end up covering UFOs as a journalist? Because it sure isn't a way to get rich or cut into the you know, a big network job as a reporter.
Right. Well, you know what happened to me. Hi, George, first of all. Great to be here. What happened was I came in the period of the late 70s. Specifically, my first article was published in 1977, that long ago.
Wow.
And that was a very good, auspicious moment. It was one of those periods between, let's say, 76 and 80, where a lot of stuff was going on and the subject was becoming more mainstream. And basically what I did is I was already had arrived to the United States. I was living in New York. I was totally unknown in this country, not obviously as an ufologist, but even as a journalist. I was still writing for some newspapers in Chile as a correspondent. And there was this story, which you might have heard, the Corporal Valdez case in Chile involving a military patrol, a military army patrol, which became a big deal in the Chilean press because it was a very strange case. And this is one of the so strange things in life. You know, my brother, I was not officially interested in UFOs. I had been a science journalist in Chile. And I had written about some, let's say, paranormal subjects like parapsychology or, you know, archaeological subjects, archaeological research. So I was, generally speaking, an open-minded person, but I knew very little about UFOs. And yet my brother sent me all these clippings. Of course, in those days, there was no internet. You know, it was not very easy to get news. And here I ended up with all these newspaper clippings, which made front page in all the main newspapers in Chile. And at the same time, I saw this little alternative newspaper in the newsstand of my neighborhood. I was living in the East Village in Manhattan back in those days. And it was a newspaper called the New York Daily Planet. You know, and the publisher was Mike Luckman. You probably heard of him. He wrote that book called Alien Rock.
Yeah, and the Daily Planet, Clark Kent was a reporter for them, wasn't he?
Well, correct. He used that name, you know, and he got in trouble with, I think it was Columbia Pictures at the time, because they were coming up with a new Superman movie, and they threatened him with lawyers. And since they didn't want that name used, even though it was the New York Daily Planet, you know, he had changed it a little bit. But in any case, that became on the July 4th edition of 1977, that became my very first UFO article. Of course, as you know, George, you're a journalist yourself. It would have never occurred to me at the time that, you know, here 35 years later, we're talking about UFOs, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, as a journalist, you come and go, right? You cover all kinds of subjects. You do a little quick research and you move on to the next story. But there was something about the story that stuck with me. And then in 1978, there was a very important event, which, in fact, as a matter of fact, I just covered it in the Open Minds .tv website, which was, I'm sure you've heard of this too, which was the UFO hearings of the United Nations.
Yes.
Which was convened by the government of Grenada. You know, Sir Eric Gehry was the prime minister of Grenada, and he was... one could almost say obsessed with the subject. It was really, he considered it like a mission for him to create a UFO agency at the UN. And so that, in November of 1978, became the very first UFO event that I ever attended and covered as a journalist. So I began in style, you know, at a hearing, at an official hearing at the UN. And that's when I met for the first time Dr. Hynek and Jacques Vallée and Stanton Friedman, because all these people were testifying at this very important hearing. So and even though this is an old story, although I did write a comprehensive article about all the background of the UN Grenada UFO Initiative in the third issue of Open Minds magazine. But just recently, there was new evidence that was released. And this came in the form of a series of documents and memos and telexes from the British mission at the UN. And well, it was part of the badge of the Ministry of Defense documents.
Well, we definitely want to get into that and these releases of information from other nations just a little bit later. I want to go to Alejandro. The same question, Alejandro. Welcome back to the show. Can you tell me how you got on this path?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me back. And
sure.
My stories are never as great as Antonio's. He's always in the right place at the right time. And I guess I was a little bit to really get started in this whole thing. But for me, I was always into science fiction and math and science, but then in college became a journalism student. So I was watching this field constantly. Plus, my family was from the mysterious San Luis Valley in Colorado, and some people know Chris O'Brien's work, where there's lots of sightings of UFOs and everything out there. It's near where Space Command is headquartered, actually. So I was always open and curious. But I was a news hound as a journalism student in 2001 when the Disclosure Project happened. And Stephen Greer and May put together this incredible panel of very credible people, including, of course, retired military officials and others, which he brought before the Washington Press Club. When he did that and I saw the press that was there, I was fascinated because for me it was like, okay, it solidified. This thing is, you know, really big, bigger than I had ever thought. There's a lot more going on than I had ever imagined, so it was eye-opening. But it was even more eye-opening and shocking to me that very little press, major media outlets covered this story as big as I thought they should. Because, you know, I was always asking, well, why don't you think UFOs are covered? Why don't you think they're covered? And from the various professional media people, I heard, oh, don't you think we want to cover that story? If we knew more about it, we'd be covering it like crazy because it's fascinating. That would be the biggest story. Here was their opportunity, and they didn't do it. And for me, I was completely compelled. That was my moment, my Richard Dreyfuss moment, where all of a sudden, you know, I'm not so bad as playing with my mashed potatoes, but of course compelled in this field where I kind of found a niche or a beat, you know, as a journalist. And I thought, this is the information that needs to get out. I'm going to dedicate a lot of my life, and I've dedicated a lot more of my life than I expected and continue to do so.
Let's go back to the idea of celebrities, specifically rock stars,
right?
Seeing you. I don't know if you guys heard the first hour with Robert Knight. He told us stories about a lot of rock stars seeing UFOs and having experiences. As journalists, speak to me about whether this is good for the field or bad for the field or kind of a mixed bag. When somebody like Sammy Hagar relates his experience and it becomes such a media sensation. I mean, on one hand, I could say that's great that people are talking about it. On the other, it gives everyone who likes to make fun of this topic yet another reason to make fun of it. Sammy Hagar, who knows what drugs he's doing, that kind of a thing. Your general thoughts about whether this is a positive or a negative development?
For me personally, you know, recently Christie Brinkley was on the Jay Leno show, and she was on with Aaron Eckhart talking about Battle LA, and they were both talking about their UFO experiences. For me, I think overall it's definitely a good thing because people are feeling more comfortable talking about their events, and it was a great first hour. That guy was incredible, his stories. But you'll notice he was even talking about how some of these rock stars are hesitant to come out and say anything. But more and more seem to be more comfortable with it. And I think it's that change of tide that's really important. Sammy Hagar said something pretty wild, I mean, pretty out there. But here again, you know, we hear from, as researchers, a lot of wild stories. And it's difficult to decide, you know, is this person telling the truth? Sometimes these are professionals. Sometimes these are, you know, entrepreneurs who have done very well for themselves, doctors, lawyers, who are telling us these wild stories, and they seem very credible. Sammy Hagar seems really credible. He's been sticking to this story for a few years now, and he hasn't changed, and he hasn't shied away from sharing it.
Antonio, your thoughts on this?
I generally agree with Alejandro. I mean, of course, there may be some. You can never satisfy everybody, right? I mean, no matter what you produce, someone's going to try to ridicule you or debunk you or something. But in generally speaking, Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, look at any cause, any whatever cause you're talking, ecological or, you know, fight for human rights or any important cause in the world. They always try to get celebrities, right, to push for that. Not because of maybe they have a particular deep knowledge or insight into something, but just because they know that they're going to get media attention, and that will bring attention to the cause. So I would think that in general is okay. And of course, in rock and roll, we've had, and I know this subject pretty well because I helped Mike a little bit on his book, and we have a lot of famous figures, and you know, including John Lennon is one of the major figures, and you know, Elvis and Jimi Hendrix, and there's even the hypothesis, you know, that some of the music was inspired, of course, by alien intervention. Of course, that's a little bit controversial, and you cannot prove it, but some of these rock stars apparently do believe that.
Well, I'm a little bit surprised about just how much of a splash the Sammy Hagar thing has made. I mean, it's been all over the place, radio and television and all over the internet. I know he's a fairly big star, but I'm just surprised that that particular nugget is what made all the news out of his book, how much news it made. I'm also impressed by not only the incident that he relates, but the fact that it sounds like he had a lifetime of experiences, which it all sounds crazy to somebody who doesn't want to believe it, but it sounds perfectly consistent with the stories you hear from the alien abduction scenarios.
Right. I think these stories with rock stars, they probably fall into two categories, right? The ones that just had an occasional sighting or something like that, and, you know, they are mildly interested. And then there are others that apparently are, you know, they've had a number of experiences. I also remember that from the period when I was living in New York, you know, and I was attending as a researcher, not as an experiencer, but I used to go to Bud Hopkins Abduction Support Group. Back in the 80s, when that was a cutting-edge phenomenon, when it was first coming, you know, into the open. And you'd be surprised how many of these abductees, after their experience, they became artistic. You know, their creativity was fired up. And some were, you know, there were many musicians, and others were artists and so on, painters and whatever. So there was, and they all believed that their experiences that had something to do with triggering their creativity.
Yeah. Let's go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to mention that Sammy Hagar actually mentioned this last April with a guitar magazine, and it made a little bit of news. And that's when actually we wrote a story on it, but not as big as news now. And tying it to the abduction thing, he actually said back then that they were doing something with him, and he was kind of waking up, and he got this mental transmission that, oh no, this guy's waking up. Which is something that abductees have actually reported as well.
Keeping with the entertainment theme, I mentioned in the beginning of the program tonight a couple of movies that are out now, and there are more on the way. I mean, the Battle L.A., Paul, and I guess a Spielberg movie, Super 8, is coming out. There's another Area 51 movie coming within the next year. It seems like the UFOs themselves, that this stuff comes in waves.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And what do you read into that? Alejandro, starting with you, do you read anything into that? It's just a coincidence. It all comes at the same time.
Well, I think it is waves. And I think when we see, especially with the media, they mostly ride on waves of popularity, which is a good thing for us in the field because it means this issue is popular. I don't think it necessarily means these individuals, except for maybe like Spielberg, who is interested in the field. A lot of these guys aren't so much. A lot of these movies coming out like Battle L.A., which we just reviewed, very cliche aliens coming to destroy the planet, same old story over and over again, Skyline, you know, some of these that have coming out. So they're just jumping on the bandwagon. But it does indicate, though, I think, that people are very interested in this subject, which is always a great thing. And in fact, you know, that's when it's time for us to do some great work to get some press releases out, to get some information out. And I think that really helped us recently with our UFO Congress that we just had last month, where we had the biggest turnout ever at this annual event.
Oh, that's good. Well, you know, and Antonio, it's sort of a double-edged sword. You have a bunch of UFO, ET-related movies come out. Often in the past, it's resulted in increased sighting reports, and then the critics will say, aha, people are seeing UFOs because these movies have influenced them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the worst that can be said is that maybe they can, in some cases, you know, they can contaminate, perhaps, you know. I mean, like some people will take ideas from the popular culture and then claim that they had real experiences, but that really doesn't happen very often. Basically, with the movies, yeah, and I've been, you know, long enough in the field that you definitely see the, what we could term like a sociological peaks and valleys, you know. I mean, there's definitely periods where the culture is very open to the phenomenon. Again, that period where I got started in the late 70s, we had, of course, the Close Encounters, you know, the big Spielberg movie, The Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but that coincided with the UN UFO hearings, the creation of the French Space Agency, UFO Agency. There was a debate on UFOs at the House of Lords. All these things were going on. And then as the 80s kicked off, it all died. And back in those days, there was no internet. So when the subject died, it almost really died, you know, unless you were a member of MUFON or APRO, some organization, and you were getting a bulletin. And we see these levels of interest, you know, they come and go. Then in the late 80s, it picked up again tremendously. And all through the 90s, it was very intense. That's the period where you were involved, George, with you know, the Bob Lazar and all the stuff, tremendous work that you did. And then as this last decade began, it kind of slowed down again. But of course, it's different now because with the internet, even when the media is not so active, the internet goes on. So things have definitely changed.
I do want to mention one other celebrity that's kind of popped up. I don't know that we have time to finish this conversation before the break, but Louis Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam. Now, I know I don't completely understand the role that ETs, UFOs play in that religion, but it seems to come up again and again with Farrakhan and his Nation of Islam folks.
Yeah, that's not a new story, as you know. I remember when the Farrakhan story first came out. And that was probably around 1988. That's the first time he went public with this vision that he had, supposedly, of this huge spaceship shaped like a man or something. And then I remember attending a very large symposium in Frankfurt, Germany, which was organized by Michael Hesseman, was known as Dialogue with the Universe. They had perhaps as many as 2,000 people there. Was at the Frankfurt Convention Center, you know, where they do the famous book fair. It was a tremendous thing, and partly because it was the first time when they had a huge delegation of people coming from the old Soviet Union. That had never happened up to that point, you know, because of Glasnost. Now these people could travel and talk freely about UFOs. Well, among all the excitement, there were the reporters from Louis Farrakhan organizations, the Clarion Call, whatever the name of their newspaper is. And they were there, and they interviewed everybody. I believe I was interviewed and quoted in their newspaper. So it's... But as you know, the Nation of Islam is a kind of a, it's not an official Islamic religion. You know, it's different. It's sort of a sect.
Yeah. Well, Alejandro, you'd have to agree that's a double-edged sword too, because I imagine a lot of people are hostile to anything that Louis Farrakhan says.
Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, rightfully so, because in the 90s, I saw him on news, on Nightline, actually, when he was talking about this, early 90s, and he said this UFO was coming to destroy the white world because of all their mistakes and the bad things they've done. And even recently, he said something similar, a little bit more mild, but that it was coming to destroy the capitalists and create this new world for people where things are more fair and everything. So, yeah, it's very difficult.
I want to get into some stories about Japan, because as anytime there seems to be a natural disaster, you get reports of UFOs hovering around the scene prior to the disaster, and there certainly are some that apply to this earthquake and tsunami. We'll get into that and a lot about releases of documents from governments all over the world. Stay with us there on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Antonio Hineas and Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds Productions, who have been getting into the whole celebrity movie entertainment scene and what it means to ufology. When we come back, we get into more serious matters, the releases of UFO documents by governments around the world. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Let's talk about Japan for a moment. The earthquake, the terrible tsunami, the terrible toll it's taken on that country. Of course, whenever you have a big incident like this, a big natural disaster, a major international incident that has the attention of the whole world, you get UFO reports, whether or not they're related or not. I'd like to ask you, Alejandro, to begin with, have you seen the UFO videos that have popped up around the time of the tsunami, and what do you think of them?
I have seen a few of the videos. They're pretty... I haven't seen one that's really convincing yet, because there are sightings on a regular basis all of the time, and drawing a correlation between an event like this and an increase in sightings, it's difficult, because with MUFON, for instance, they're taking sighting reports on a regular basis, and so you can look and you can correlate and see if there's an increase. You would need something like that in Japan that I'm not aware of. And unfortunately, you know, you would think even right now with the nuclear disaster that they're facing right now, you could possibly see more sightings. But it doesn't seem like we do see this consistent report or capturing of UFOs, even though this disaster continues right now. They could have meltdowns, three meltdowns going on at any moment, which is bigger than Chernobyl.
Antonio, let me ask you this. You know, you get an incident like this, and of course, people want to speculate, did UFOs cause it? Were they just there to monitor it? Were they there at all? Certainly, you got people like Louis Farrakhan who speculate that they're here to save us. They sure as heck didn't save anyone in Japan.
Right. Yeah. Again, I mean, well, it's specifically with earthquakes, so there might be an interesting phenomena, which is, and this is something that geologists, and I've seen this on scientific literature, that sometimes when you have tectonics moving and things like that, you do have like earthquake lights, so there might be a natural phenomena there too that some people might have seen. I'm just generally speculating. You know, I'm not sure that that's what happened in Japan. Now, as far as I know, I've seen the same argument in Ancient Aliens on the series on the History Channel, where they did a program on catastrophes. Of course, this was before the Japanese disaster. And the same program, they made both arguments. Aliens are causing catastrophes and aliens are coming to save us. Well, make up your mind. What is it? You know, I mean, I don't think both things can be at the same time. I think that that they are causing it is probably preposterous. That they're monitoring it, that's more likely, especially the radioactivity, you know, issue. It's possible.
Every time there's a disaster, you know, two stories are going to come out, and usually from some UFO people that get some visibility. You're always going to get a story that the UFOs are here to help us with this disaster, and you're always going to get the story that UFOs caused the disaster every time a major event happens.
Or that HAARP did it.
Oh, yeah.
Right, HAARP is the other one, exactly.
You know, I even though I was fortunate that I was not in Chile at the time, but in 1960, there was a horrendous series of earthquakes, tsunamis, volcanoes. Everything in the south of Chile is famous in geological history. This went on like for a month. There was more people would have died if it would have been in more heavily populated areas. There was still over 10,000 fatalities. And but in those days, of course, nobody was talking of HAARP or anything. You know, when you did have these kinds of disasters, it was just ascribed to nature, and that was it.
Let's move into discussions of disclosure, document releases. Seems like every time you turn around, France or Britain or somebody is releasing their UFO files, and of course, whatever our government still has stashed, they don't release. Maybe we start it this way. You had talked earlier, Antonio, about the UN incident and some new documents that came out from Britain that mm-hmm. reflect on what happened, what was going on back then. Tell that part of the story. What's new?
Yeah, what's interesting, of course, this is obviously not a new story. I mean, the British documents are new, but the story itself, of course, happened back in the period of between 1976 and 79, roughly speaking. That's when the late Prime Minister Gerry was making his very heavy-handed initiative to bring UFOs to the UN, and he was very persistent. And oddly enough, the United States documents, I mean, the U.S. had released some documents years ago under the Freedom of Information Act, and the U.S. did not oppose it. I mean, they wanted to keep it kind of under control, you know, small in terms of budget and scope. But the British, what these documents reveal, the British were implacably opposed to it. They try to block it at every stage. And, of course, you have to understand why people would think, well, why were the British so involved and not the U.S. when Grenada is in the Caribbean? But you have to remember that Grenada was a British colony. And when Gary was the first head of state, and Grenada had just become independent. The independence of Grenada happened in 1974, and it was Gary who was even knighted by the British Queen, so they knew him very well. And obviously, they didn't want it. The documents are quite almost, I would say, undiplomatic. I mean, they say that they shouldn't even hide the fact that they're opposed to it.
Was there a reason? Do we know why?
They claim that it was because it would bring ill repute to the UN. It would look bad or something like that. But it seems to me that that's sort of just a more ostensible reason. But they were definitely opposed, and they were trying to work behind the scenes with the other European community countries, which are referred in the document as the Nine. And this got me going, you know, because I said, what is this, some new secret conspiracy or something? But then I did a little research, and then what I find out is, like, in the 70s, what was known as the Nine were those countries that were part of the European community who were also members of the United Nations. And at that time, there were nine countries. Of course, the European community later expanded, you know, to many other countries, the Eastern European countries. So that term doesn't apply anymore.
Well, there is another use for that term. There's rumors, really, about a group, some sort of space brethren called the Nine, some space entities. I think not to beat this Sammy Hagar story to death, but I think that Hagar, in one of his interviews, says that he thinks he was contacted by the Nine.
That's correct. That comes from a famous parapsychologist that was called Dr. Andre Hapu-Harris, who you probably, I'm sure you've heard of it.
Sure,
George, you might have even met him, who was the one that first brought Uri Geller, the famous Israeli psychic, to the United States. And he had a bunch of people that claimed to be in contact with this alleged, you know, group of extraterrestrials known as the Nine. That's when that was published for the first time.
Alejandro, can you guys, one of the important things you do at Open Minds Production is you monitor all these stories as they come in from around the world. You put them on your website, and so you have sort of your finger on the pulse of the UFO flow of information. It seems like, and maybe I'm exaggerating, that every other week we're getting information about some document dump from one country or another.
Mm-hmm.
Am I mischaracterizing that?
No, you're right. It's definitely happening a lot, and it's increasing. But I think what people miss a lot of times is looking at the details. For instance, these British files, they're getting released on regular basis a couple times a year, and you're getting a lot of great stuff. But the British government kind of took these releases as their impetus to close their UFO research department. At the end of 2009, they said, we're no longer taking any UFO reports from the public, because they felt that these documents that they were releasing demonstrated that UFOs are not a concern for national security. Whereas if you look at these files, which we've been doing and posting, and people like Nick Pope have been on Fox News and many other television shows talking about them, just the opposite. There are files where Air Force officers are dealing with them. Milton Torres, that story came out of a U.S. Air Force officer who wrote something to the British government about how he was told to chase a giant UFOs and shoot missiles at it. Or you have Bentwaters, or you have a case of a commercial airline that was buzzed by a giant triangular aircraft, and they were really pressing to know what the heck is going on. They wanted the government to check into it. The government response, which we can see in the British files, is, oh, I asked somebody about that, and they said you shouldn't worry about it, so don't worry about that. So we're seeing just the opposite in these files, kind of like Condon. Back in 1969, the U.S. Air Force had a study done, and in the details of the study are some very compelling stories that show that this is a real phenomenon that should be of concern. But in the end, they said, no, it's not a concern. Air Force shut everything down. So Britain is not an example of someone doing this because they want to push this issue forward, or at least start to open up UFO investigations. However, there are countries that are different. For instance, France, their aerospace community had put forward and has done this on a regular basis, reports where they keep open to the idea that UFOs are of extraterrestrial origin and certainly are a phenomena of concern. And then Antonio can actually talk more to South America, because these guys are really taking the UFO subject serious in South America.
Okay, Antonio?
Yeah, well, what we see in South America is different from the rest of the world in two respects. First, with regards to documents, we do not see yet a large release of documents in South America, with the exception of Brazil. Brazil is very similar to what Britain and New Zealand and France and other countries are doing, basically, and this was in partly by popular demand. You know, there was a lobbying effort that took place a few years ago, and finally, basically, the Air Force, the Brazilian Air Force, who had had commissions going all the way back to 1952, they decided that it was time to release a lot of their files, even though some of these documents had been released. Actually, I had some of them already in my files years ago, but they were not officially released. They were sort of leaked, you know, to researchers and people like that. But then now they're officially being released. But then what we see with the other countries, and this particularly was brought to my attention in December of this last year, when Argentina announced that they were going to create an official committee to investigate UFOs, the Argentinian Air Force. And Argentina is just the latest country. We have definitely a trend in South America, especially in the southern part of South America, Argentina, Uruguay, Peru, and Chile. And all these countries have now official UFO agencies. It's become good politics, which is almost unbelievable. But because in the case of Argentina, actually the head of the new commission, which is a man known as Comodoro Tealdi. Comodoro is a rank equivalent to a colonel. And he said that part of the reasons that they finally decided to create this committee is because their institutional website of the Air Force was being flooded with requests for them to create a UFO agency. And also the mail was arriving at the Ministry of Defense by hundreds of letters. So that was one reason. I think the other reason, which they wouldn't admit it publicly, is that they were getting behind the curve. Here they had all the neighboring countries. They all had UFO agencies already, in some cases for years. Uruguay actually has the oldest one. That is called Tridovni, and that was created back in 1979. And it's still functioning.
Is there any connection to a level of UFO activity that helped prompt this? I just don't know of any. Is there a wave or something going on?
Usually these commissions were created as a result of a lot of UFO activity at the time when they were created. It's one of the reasons. And Chile and Peru, the one in Chile was created in 1997. Took a little while to get really going. And the one in Peru was created around 2001. Now, the level, all these committees, they claim they're not secret. They are open. Some of these people I know personally. I know the ones in Chile and Peru, actually, personally. I've been at their offices in Chile. And but the level of where they're posting their material, that varies. The only ones that seem to have a more active website, official website, where they do post some cases, is the one from Chile, which is known as CEFAA, and that's a committee run by the Chilean Civil Defense Agency. It would be like if the FAA had a committee for UFOs.
Well, I wonder this, Antonio. First, you answer it about South America, and then, Alejandro, you can tell me about the rest of the world. But I wonder if you see any evidence of the heavy hand of the United States in this. It seems like our government seems to be the one that is most opposed to releasing whatever. Do you see any evidence that those countries have been pressured to, if not stifle the idea of a study, at least keep any sensitive files to themselves?
No, frankly, I don't see it now. In the past, that probably was the case, because in the past, especially in the period of the Cold War
And a lot of these countries in South America had even military dictators at the time, and they were very close to the Americans, you know, because the deal was Cuba and communism and all that. At that time, the U.S. had much more influence over this, over the military specifically. I frankly don't see any. I mean, it seems to be almost on the contrary. I mean, these countries are proceeding, are going ahead. Now, they're not coming with any, you know, revelations or anything that would threaten, you know, the U.S. or anything. And none of these countries is coming to, let's say, saying, hey, we have a crashed UFO and here are the metal pieces. You know,
right.
if they were to announce that, maybe the U.S. would react, or maybe the U.S. has even quashed something in that direction. But from what we see, in terms of them speaking about their pilot cases and cases on radar and so on, the Uruguayans have a fascinating case, a landing case, similar to the Trans-en-Provence, you know, the famous one in France back in 1981, which is one of the most interesting and scientifically documented cases where the physiology of the plants was changed, and all this was documented by the French government back in the 80s. I just find out recently that there was an interesting case in Uruguay too, where there were deposits of phosphorus and zinc and manganese or whatever in the plants, and this coincided with the number of spheres that were hovering over the field, and they did a total of 8. There were a total of 8 marks. So yes, there you have a case with interesting evidence. So no, I don't see that. Your specific question about the U.S. You know, interfering.
Well, Alejandro, what about UK? You mentioned that they've sort of taken the same approach that our government has. You release a report, the intro and the ending all say there's nothing of concern here. Move along, folks. Don't even look at this stuff. It's not a concern to national security. Yet the bulk of the report shows quite the contrary. In specifically regarding the UK, you mentioned some really interesting cases that came out, but it sure looks like they're holding back some of the most important stuff, specifically Bentwaters.
Definitely. Good point. With Bentwaters and with Milton Torres, I think what an interesting point to those two cases are their American cases. These are U.S. servicemen who, while in service, had some extraordinary events that they claimed other U.S. Military or organizations were involved with. However, you haven't seen U.S. files or really much said on the U.S. side for those cases. So you have some evidence here in the British files that the United States was sending planes up in the Milton Torres case to shoot at UFOs. You also have then in the Bentwaters case that, you know, these people had an extraordinary experience with a landing and seeing UFOs, servicemen. But even, you know, Colonel Charles Hault, who was a deputy base commander at the time, believes that his men were drugged and debriefed by OSI agents. He doesn't know who these people are. And that's what these servicemen reported to have happened. So you can see that there are government agencies, Air Force, Office of Special Investigation involved, but in a very clandestine way. However, and you don't hear any response on the U.S. side. So that's eye-opening from the British files. But like you said, they still, you know, use this to say, oh, don't worry about it. So you kind of see, you know, you would think the United States wouldn't like this Milton Torres story coming out. They wouldn't like more coming out about Bentwaters, and the UK probably has more files that way. So I don't know if there's any U.S. heavy-handedness there. As far as UFO or heavy-handedness by the U.S. in this arena, you know, it's kind of anecdotal. You hear stories of crashes in Mexico that were recovered by the U.S., things like this. So unfortunately, it's kind of anecdotal. It would make sense because with the influence that the U.S. has.
Yep. But
right now, no clear evidence.
All right. Antonio Joneas, Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds Productions. We had a lot of ground still to cover. UFOs all over the world. We're going to talk about China and Africa and other releases of information. Stay with us, everyone. Lots more to come on Coast to Coast AM.